wanted a bike, and his mother told him, well, pray about it. So pray about it. So he prays, and he says, Dear Jesus, I've been a good kid. Please give me a bike. And then he said, No. Dear Jesus, I'm trying to be a good kid. Please give me a bike. And then he gave up. And he goes across the street, and he steals a statue of Mary, and he comes back and says, Dear Jesus, if you don't give me a bike, you'll never see your mother again. we're going into the Ten Commandments, and last week we were talking about the first commandment, to love God, no other gods, and this is who we are to worship. This week we go into the second commandment. The second commandment is, you shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth beneath or the waters below. So there's a second commandment. This is about how we are to worship. So the first two commandments, who we are to worship and how we are to worship. To get right into this here, there's a prohibition. You look at the second commandment, and what is God telling us here? And I see two things that are being emphasized, actually. One is, there should be no replicas of the one true God. And we'll expand on this a little bit here. No, don't make a graven image. Even if you're thinking this is the one true God. And then you got to think about all the ways that we apply this, all the applications of this here. And I saw an illustration on this. I thought this was very interesting. It'd be kind of like a five-year-old kid trying to recreate the Mona Lisa with a piece of chalk on the sidewalk, which you might think, oh, that's kind of cute. But when you're talking about God, well, okay, because I've seen this before. Like a picture draws a child draws a picture of mom and dad, and oh, I've seen some pictures. I've seen some big pictures here. But you see a picture, and you're thinking, at first, well, that's kind of cute. It's kind of flattering. Mom's drinking a bottle of wine, and then you're like, okay, stop drawing pictures of me. Stop drawing pictures. Because, you don't, it can be horrifying. Now, I'm thinking that the child drawing a picture of Mona Lisa is like us drawing a picture of God. We can't. How can you put God in a picture? How can you put God in a statue? How can you put God in anything? So one prohibition is no replicas of the one true God. The second prohibition here is no images of false gods. So the question is, what are we doing with God Almighty? And secondly, what false gods have we created? Those are the two issues that I want to try to deal with today. Which you would think, oh, do we have this problem? Do we have this problem? We don't have this problem. You go to another country, they might have this problem. I've not ever been to India, but I've heard India, they have gods everywhere. They have a god to snakes. They have a god to rats. They have all these different gods. I don't get it. I understand, they might even have a little god that they carry in their purse or in their pocket or something like that. I mean, can't imagine doing something like that. I mean, we might carry an iPhone, but we would never carry a god. They have like gods set up in their house, a little altar to God where everybody sets around the god, kind of like we do with TV. Or in their community, they might have a place where you go and you worship the local god, like a Starbucks or something. Or in the city, a big temple to their god, to their football team. Let me move on here. This is getting bad here. What is idolatry? What is this? Idolatry. Oh, by the way, I heard this. A lady in India who'd been to America. She had been to America, and somebody asked her, so you ever coming back? I mean, how did you like it? What do you think? I mean, America, this is the land of the free. This is a great country, right? She said, oh, I could never go back to America. Well, why not? I can't stomach the idolatry. This is a lady in India. You're saying that about America. Do we even see it? So here I'm asking, do we have a problem with this? We don't have a problem with this. Oh, really? Really? So let's think through it. What is idolatry? Idolatry is the corruption of true worship. And are we corrupting what worship is really about? Have we made worship about something that it's not supposed to be about? Are worshiping symbols that might represent God? statues, saints, pictures, maybe even crosses. And I'm thinking about some of these things. I mean, I don't want to say all these things are wrong. I'm not saying all these things are wrong. We can take good things and then we make them God things. And when we make them God things, they become bad things. And we got to be very careful. I think it sneaks up on us. We don't realize it's happening. I don't think the Israelites realized it. When they remember the story, I don't remember that number someplace where they were complaining and all these snakes bit them. And God told Moses, build a bronze snake. And when people look at it, they'll be healed. The snakes will go away. And so they built a bronze image of a snake. And later on, and I think it's in 2 Kings 18, you find that the people were worshiping the snake right now. It was supposed to be a reminder, look at what God has done for you. But instead of it being a reminder, they started worshiping it. We look at the cross. The cross is a reminder of what Jesus Christ has done for us. But I've seen people who take that cross and they take it too far. And they begin, it's about the cross. It becomes a lucky charm. The cross becomes an idol. So we got to be careful about this stuff. Idolatry is about worshiping the wrong God. We got to be careful about that. I got this great story here. This is great. Y'all ready for this one? There's a tribe in someplace in New Guinea, a tribe in New Guinea that likes big ears. And apparently, President Lyndon Johnson had big ears. So there's a professor in Holland, Dr. Ulrich. He says the people of this tribe in New Guinea, they actually have a picture of President Johnson pulling on the big ears of his beagles. So this photo is hung in caves, and they offer flowers to it. It's funny. It's cute. It's sad is what that is. But it's really, I mean, really? And yet, I'm thinking, we could be just as guilty. We just don't see it. We don't see what we're doing, but we can see what they're doing. The second commandment prohibits all idols, whether they are idols of stone or idols of wood or idols of metal or idols of the mind. Idols of the heart, idols of the emotions, whether they are tangible or intangible, whether external or internal, all idols are crushed in the statement of God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven images. I don't know why I have this in King James. And yet, though this is the first and primary commandment of the scripture, it's a looming reality that humans are idolaters. We have a history of idolatry. You take it all the way back to the Old Testament, you can see it in the New Testament, you can see it today, you can see it in all other cultures. I fear we can't see it in ourselves. We can't see it in our culture. We grew up with it. We become accustomed to it. What we do is no big deal. What other people do, that's a big deal. But what we do is no big deal. John Calvin, he says, the human heart is an idol factory. The human heart is constantly making new idols. And we've got to guard our hearts. We've got to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And this is an ongoing process. The fourth thing I want to tell you idolatry is worshiping the right God, but in the wrong way. Doing that which he prohibits, which we might think is no big deal. I mean, we think we're honoring God, when in fact we are insulting God. There's a story in Leviticus 10. Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, they took their censers and they put fire in them and they added incense and they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord. And I think King James says strange. They offered strange fire. They offered strange fire to the Lord. It's just their religious practice. It's what they're doing. This is good. We're trying to honor God. But this was contrary to his command. So the fire came out from the presence of the Lord, and it consumed them. So when you offer strange fire, you get devoured. Okay, that's what the principle is. So we got to be careful. How are we worshiping God? Are we worshiping God the way God has instructed us to worship him? And what's the big deal with building an idol? Now you build, I don't want to say an idol. Idol is a bad word, but building a statue of Jesus or building a statue of God. Or, you know, I'm trying to honor him. What's the problem with that? Well, the problem with that, couple things. One is it limits your understanding of who God really is. Let me give you this illustration. And this might work just for old people. I don't know. But let me give you a name. And if I give you a name and you recognize the name, it might mean you're old. Shirley Temple. Okay, Shirley Temple. Think about Shirley Temple. Okay. Now, when I say Shirley Temple, what image pops up in your mind? What do you think? What do you see? I mean, she's still 9 years old, right? She will always be 9 years old. Or however old she was in the cute little movies that she made 100 years ago. She will always be this little. My home church, which I think my home church loved me when I was a kid. I don't know that they like me now, but when I was a kid, they loved me. But when I've gone back there, for whatever reasons, I've gone back to my home church, I'm still that little kid. They can't see me any other way. What do we do with Jesus? We baby Jesus, we put him in a manger, and he will always be baby Jesus. And see, baby Jesus, he's so sweet. He's so innocent. We can, you know, pictures of Jesus, I understand, pictures of Jesus came out like in, I don't know when, they probably been around forever, 2,000 years and all. But back in the 50s, if you look at a picture of Jesus back in the 50s, he was meek and he was mild, which was translated, he was weak. And nobody, well, I don't want to say nobody, a lot of people didn't want anything to do with that Jesus. If that's Jesus, I don't want to be a Christian. So then some people got clever, the culture got clever, and they thought, well, what if we make Jesus into a hippie, you know, during the 60s and 70s? So then you start seeing pictures of Jesus, and he looks like a hippie. He's kind of cool to people who like hippies. I don't. But this is Jesus. So they're trying to transform Jesus to our culture, rebrand Jesus, you know? And then in the 80s and the 90s, you start seeing pictures of Jesus that... He started coming out looking like a model. So is this Jesus, or is this what we're doing with Jesus? Because when we do this with Jesus, and we tell everybody, look at Jesus, this is Jesus, this is who Jesus is. And you get a very limited understanding of the creator of the universe. You can do this with pictures. I mean, you think about pictures. You go to Niagara Falls, you take a picture. Everybody, look at my picture of Niagara Falls. Well, big deal, it's, you know, water, you know. Look at my picture of the Grand Canyon, a hole in the ground. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of the Niagara Falls. I've never seen a picture of the Grand Canyon where I said, ooh, ah, wow. But I've been to Niagara Falls. I've been to the Grand Canyon. Pretty impressive. But a picture is not impressive. And then you think, I got another illustration about pictures for whatever reason. I went to the Million Man March of Promise Keepers. I went to D.C., million people. And you know what was on the TV during that Million Man, when the media tried to cover the Million Man March, all I saw on the media was the pictures of the 20 people who were protesting. And they made it like, look at all these protesters. Now, I was there. I saw like 20 protesters. But I saw a million men worshiping the Lord. And that's a story they didn't tell you. This is what we do with God. We tell a little bit of the story. It limits our understanding. And when we limit our understanding, then it limits our reverence. We have a small view of God. And when we have a small view of God, why worship that? Why give my life to that? And that's what we do. And in my study this week, I just want to bring this one out. I don't think I've ever done this. I don't think I ever would do this. I've heard this many times. Just want to say it, and just in case you do this, ever referred to God as the big man upstairs? You've reduced God to a neighbor. That's all he is. Be careful with. I mean, it sounds friendly. It sounds cool. It sounds, you know, it sounds like you've got this intimate relationship with him. You've reduced him. Where's the awe? Where's the reverence? So think about things like that. And when we limit our understanding, when we limit our reverence, we limit God's awesomeness. How awesome he truly is. I hope that we are a people who are overwhelmed by who God is. How awesome our God is. Let me read to you Deuteronomy chapter 4. I want to read 9 through 18. I've got a verse that's going to pop up here, verse 12, but let me get into it here. This is the second giving of the Ten Commandments. It was given in Exodus 20. It was also given in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Well, right before Moses gives the reading of the Ten Commandments the second time, this is what he says in Deuteronomy 4, verse 9, "Only be careful and watch yourselves closely, so that you do not forget the things that your eyes have seen, and let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their their children after them. Remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, when he said to me, assemble the people before me to hear my words, so they may learn to revere me as long as they live in the land and may teach them to their children. You came near and stood at the foot of the mountain while it blazed with fire to the very heavens, with black clouds and deep darkness. And then get this, verse 12. Then the Lord spoke to you out of the fire, and you heard the sound of words, but you saw no form. There was only a voice. What Moses is reminding them, remember when the Ten Commandments was originally given to you? You saw the fire, you saw the smoke, you saw lightning, you heard thunder, the majesty of God, and you heard his voice, but you saw no form. Why is that? God would not let himself be reduced to an image, because it limits who he is. It limits his awesomeness. So what happens here, this is what we do when we make these images. We're trying to domesticate God and tame him and control him. We make God into something that we can handle. And then when we can handle it, when we can get a grip on who God is, so we can explain him to other people, so we can explain him to our children. You know, here, let's bring God down to this thing right here. This is God. Let me tell you about God on a flannel thing, a little flannel piece of Jesus. Let me tell you about God. What happens here? We've limited his awesomeness, and then he becomes optional. Just one of many gods. And then what we're doing then becomes all about us and not about God. We're trying to create a God that we can, that will serve us, instead of being people who will serve God. I'd love to get into that. I don't think I got time because I've got too much stuff here. Is this the next page here? I think it could be the next page. If not, just go with it. Okay, the golden calf. Remember the golden calf? Here, God gives them this commandment. Don't make any idols. That's in Exodus 20. Exodus 32, what do? They make a golden calf. They said, give us a God that we can follow. As for this Moses, we don't know where he went. We don't know what he's doing. So Aaron, Moses' brother, he took all the gold they handed him, and he made it into an idol cast in the shape of what? A calf. Fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. And then when Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf, and he announced, tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord, to Yahweh. You know, we're still talking about the same God, but now we've reduced him to a golden calf. It's not a different God. That's our God. He's the one who rescued us from Pharaoh. This is God. Now, why would you take God and make him into a golden calf? Why would you do that? A golden calf. And the first thing I'm thinking of is because they came out of Egypt. It's what they know. They used to worship cows in Egypt, and now they worship cows out in the wilderness. It's what they know. But it's more than that here. Aaron made something they could see, because we want to see God. And then get this. He made something that could serve them. When you think of a cow, what does a cow do? A cow doesn't do much, right? But it does give you milk. And sacrificially, it gives you meat, and those are cool things. You know, we like milk, we like meat. But this way, you know, the cow exists to serve us. To give us, so symbolically, this golden calf represents, you know, this is what God does for us. He gives us milk, and he gives us meat. And I'm thinking another reason why Aaron made a golden calf. When you think about cow, I think cows, and I like cows, by the way. I really like cows more than horses. Which is offensive to some people. I don't get that. But cows are cool. I think cows are cool. And here's the thing I like about cows versus you people who like horses. Cows are low maintenance. I mean, what do they need? Just give them a little grass. They give you milk and they give you meat. It's really cool. So Aaron makes a god for them that they can see, that exists to serve them, that's low maintenance, convenient. That's a cool god, isn't it? Don't say yes, okay? I'm being sarcastic here. Now, the benefits of what Aaron made, the benefits There's low expectations. There's no emphasis on you needing to be holy or righteous or just or forgiving. Yet the cow doesn't say you have to do that. There's no rules. The cow isn't giving you 10 commandments. And the cow gives you what you need. This is why we like to make idols. This is what we do with our idols. We make idols that serve us. And we still call it God. We think, ooh, God, he's awesome. He's powerful. He's everything. He exists to serve me. That's his job. Aaron had created for them a God that existed to serve them. Then I get down to verse 6. This is Exodus 32, verse 6. So the next day, the people rose early, and they sacrificed burnt offerings, and they presented fellowship offerings. And afterwards, they sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in revelry. They got up to indulge in revelry. It's awesome to have a God that there's no rules. Do whatever you want. Indulge. I believe this is why we make our idols. What happens when people lose sight of God's will? What happens when people lose sight of God's calling? What happens when we fail to honor his word? When people mix worldly ideas with godly ideas? When people compromise the essence of godliness with a form of godliness? And what they indulge in robbery. And you know what? The rest of the story, I mean, God was ticked. And he came down and struck 3,000 of them dead. By his grace, he didn't kill them all. 3,000 of them died because of what they'd done. Now, I look at this. You know, they compromise the essence of godliness with a form of godliness. And do we not do the same today, having a form of godliness but denying its power? Because we've made God into something he's not. He's not. Never was supposed to be. I want to give you another illustration here, another story out of the Bible. This is in Judges chapter 16, Judges chapter 17. Micah's idol. Micah, not the prophet Micah, but another guy named Micah. This is what it says in Judges 17, verse 1. Now, a man named Micah from the hill country of Ephraim, he said to his mother, "The 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, about which I heard you utter a curse, I have that silver with me. I took it." Then his mother said, "The Lord bless you, my son." Do you see what's going on? What happened here. Just know she lost 1,100 shekels of silver, and she's upset. She's mad. She's cursing. It says she's cursing. And Micah comes along and says, "Yeah, I'm the one who took it. I stole it." And he confesses. And then she praises him. She blesses him. I would have punished him. I would have killed him. But here she's blessing him. "Oh, praise God, you give me my money back." And then she says this. Get this here. This was the verse 3. This is Judges 17, verse 3. She says, "I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord." Once again, Yahweh. "I solemnly consecrate my silver to the Lord for my son to make a carved image and a cast idol." What? And this is, she's an Israelite. She should know better. And what's she doing? I'm thinking, is she worshiping God Almighty, or is she worshiping her son? Either way, she's outside of the boundaries of God. And she gives the money. She donates the money so they can make an idol. So that's just half the story. Then the story goes on here. Verse 7, a young Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, who had been living within the clan of Judah, left the town in search of some other place to stay. And on his way, he came to Micah's house in the hill country of Ephraim. And Micah asked him, where are you from?" "I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah," he said, "and I'm looking for a place to stay." And Micah said to him, "Live with me and be my father and my priest." So it seemed like a good thing. The Levite comes along. Micah hires him to be his personal priest, who then eventually becomes his good luck charm, an idol. And this is what Micah says. It's down verse 13. He says, "I know that the Lord will be good to me since the Levite has become my priest." The Lord will bless me because I got a priest in my house. You got a priest in your house? You want God's blessing? You got to get a priest. The priest becomes an idol. And I want you, before I move on from this little story here, I want you to notice a couple things about Micah and Micah's mom. This little family here, just a little story in Judges chapter 17, there is stealing, and there is cursing, and there is coveting, and there's idolatry. And Micah and his mother are morally bankrupt. Notice that Micah and his mother, they both have a desire to worship Yahweh, but they have no desire to obey. And Judges 17 represents our culture today. This is us. So we got to guard our hearts. We got to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. See, the core issue here is the core issue with all the commandments. You look at the first commandment, the second commandment. The issue is having a right relationship with God. Everything else is foundation. That is the foundation. I made it a long time without doing that. It was cool. Okay. The essence of a right relationship. Where am I at here? The first and second, it was good too. I was right on. Oh, I was right ahead of you. I was right there. Now I start coughing. The essence of a right relationship with God. The first and second commandment. No other gods, no idols, no cheap imitations. Is foundation for all other right relationships here. To be a true disciple of God, have true devotion, is the key to having liberty. Now, like I saw this here, somebody referred to the Ten Commandments as God's statutes of liberty. You like your liberty, you like your freedom, you got to get this right. If you don't get this right, you will not have liberty. You will fall back into bondage. In John chapter 8, verse 36, says, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. You will truly know what freedom is about. But you got to have a right relationship with the Son of God. I say all that there. Let's talk about us now. Talk about America here. And our idols. What are our idols? Could it be your car? Let me throw this out here just to make some of you guys mad. A car is a mode of transportation. It's also a status symbol. If it's a status symbol, maybe it's a god. Just a thought. Could it be your hobby? Could it be your house? Or your spouse? Or your children, or a Hollywood star, or your bank book. Christianity Today, the magazine Christianity Today, asked a panel of Christian scholars this question: what are the most prevalent gods of our time? Those mentioned included many things: the anti-Christian welfare state, scientism, communism, political democracy, nationalism, conservatism, social adjustment, behavioralism, secularism, humanism, naturalism, the cult of progress. I don't know what half those things are, but the other ones I do know, I recognize. Yeah, we got issues. We got issues. More personal idols were listed by Dr. Andrew Blackwood, professor emeritus of Princeton. He said, America has these following gods: self, money, pleasure, sex, romance, amusements, sports, education. These are all false gods, which we turn to, which we give our lives to, and we worship them. And it's so offensive to God. The principal god of our time, says Dr. W. Stanford Reed of McGill University. He says, is our standard of living. We are so concerned with material possessions that we have forgotten they are all gifts from God. We worship the gifts instead of the giver. Our gods could be possessions, it could be plenty, it could be pride, it could be pleasure, it could be projects like PTA or Little League or World Peace or Rotary. Our politics, it could be prominence. Chuck Swindoll, he describes an editorial cartoon where the words I, me, mine, myself appear on an enormous monument with thousands of people with arms held high as if they were worshiping it. Surrounding the borders were four familiar lines from commercials: have it your way, do yourself a favor, you owe it to yourself, you deserve a break today. We worship ourselves. Dr. Laura Schlesinger says, you could rewrite the second commandment, do not make yourself into an idol. So, you know, yeah, America has problems, but not, you know, we're Christians. We're better than that. We go to church. And then I thought, oh, but Christians, man, we have our idols, don't we? The church I grew up in, they decided they were going to relocate okay, I'm back. No, I'm not. Okay, I'm good. All right, but the church I grew up in, yeah, they were going to relocate, but there was a big fit about relocating the church. People were really upset because they were married in that church, and their children were baptized in that church. So somehow this church, a place of worship, became a thing of worship. Got to be careful about stuff like that. I've talked about, you know, when the cross becomes more than just a reminder of what Jesus Christ has done for us. Our worship songs, our worship styles, all these become objects of worship. When we follow certain people, certain preachers, nobody follows me, by the way, I've noticed that. It's probably because I cough too much. These are good things that become God things, and that is a bad thing. But you would say, but Pete, I mean, just, they help me in my worship. They help me. They're aids to worship. The cross is an aid to worship. The building is an aid to worship. The worship songs are aids to worship. Okay, now think about this. Think through this here a little bit when you say that. So you go into a restaurant. I'm going to use it. Okay, ladies, you go into a restaurant, and then you see your husband back in a corner in a booth with a really beautiful woman, and you get ticked. And he tells you, she's just there to aid me in my devotion to you. You gonna buy that? You gonna buy that? You think God buys it when you tell him that all these things, they just help me in my worship of you, God? No. That is forbidden. You worship God and God alone. And get this, we go on in Exodus chapter 20. This is still in the second commandment. He goes on, you shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of their fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. But it goes on, it says, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. What God says, he's a jealous God. Do you understand what that means, he's a jealous God? And to understand he's jealous for you, not of you, which means he loves you, he cares about you, he wants what's best for you. He doesn't want to see you get hurt. He doesn't want you to go fall back into slavery. He cares about you. Can you imagine this? I talked about the women already. Okay, I want to talk to the men here. Men, can you imagine you come home? You come home one day, and there's a 50-year-old man in your living room who wants to date your 15-year-old daughter. Tell me what you're going to do. Yeah. Yeah, I see what some of you guys are going to do. Yeah. There is a certain, it's not that you're trying to control your daughter. You love your daughter. You're trying to protect your daughter. So you're it's a jealousy. God is jealous because he loves you. He doesn't want you to get hurt. It talks about punishing the children for the sins of their fathers. And somebody says, that's not fair. This is natural law is what this is. Because you do something that is forbidden by God, and guess what your children are going to do? Your children are going to learn from you. Children follow their parents. I fully expect my children to turn out like me, and it scares me to death. And this is why I think we need to be so passionate about keeping our focus where our focus needs to be, that we worship God and God alone. And hopefully by doing that, there's hope for my children. I'm not saying they'll turn out good, but there's hope, you know? Children follow their parents. So be very careful not to redefine God or reduce God to something less than what he is. As parents, we don't get the children we want, we get the children we are. If you are an idolater, your children will be idolaters, and they will pay. We will pay for our disobedience to God. God equates us to hate. He says, punishing the children for the sins of their fathers and the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. God equates this disobedience to hate. So I got a question. Do you want to be punished by God? Do you want your children to be punished? Or what he goes on here, it says, he shows love to 1,000 generations to those who love him. Do you love him? Love him enough to obey him? 1 John 5:21 says, dear children, keep yourselves from idols. So I'll get to the back page here. I want you to understand a couple things. Idols, in whatever form, and I really don't feel like I'm talking about statues. I'm talking about all things in America that we worship above God. And I'm talking about a lot of gods that we set up in our mind. They're not made from metal. They're mental. All these gods, idols will disappoint you. Do you understand? They will disappoint you because they always promise more than they can deliver. Jeremiah 10 verse 14 says, those who make idols are disillusioned because the gods they made are false and lifeless. We're told if we wear this label, we'll be popular. If we drink this beer, it just doesn't get any better than this. And if we buy this toothpaste, we'll have sex appeal. And all you actually end up with is dressed, drunk, and shiny teeth. Yeah. That's all you get. Psalm 135 says, the idols of the nation are silver and gold, made by the hands of men. They have mouths, but they cannot speak. They have eyes, but they cannot see. They have ears, but they cannot hear. Nor is there breath in their mouth. Those who make them will be like them. Jeremiah 2 verse 5 says, they follow worthless idols, and they become worthless themselves. They have feet, but they can't come running to you when you need them. They have hands, but they won't lift a finger to help you. They have eyes, but they don't see your heart or what's going on in your life. They have ears, but they can't hear you cry out. They have no power. They make these promises they can't keep, but they can't protect you. They can't answer prayer. They're worthless. Why do we exalt them above God? It's because we want them to serve us instead of serving the one true God. Idols will disappoint you. Idols will dominate you. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12, before you knew Christ, you were controlled by dead idols who always led you astray. You were controlled by them. You were addicted. You were enslaved. Today, people are controlled and led astray as they become addicted to work or sports or sex or drugs or anything else they commit themselves to. You see, what is a God? A God is who you commit yourself to. We are programmed to be controlled and mastered. The only freedom we really have is to choose what will master us. A God is basically something that you surrender your life to. And your freedom comes by choosing the best master. And God alone should be your master. Idols are like dictators. They promise you everything, but they give you nothing in return. So they disappoint you, they dominate you, and they will deform you. Psalm 115:8 says, those who make idols become like them. Romans 1, you should be very familiar with Romans 1. Romans 1, verse 20, 21, although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. So what happened? Their thinking became futile. Goes on in verse 28, furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to depraved minds. This is what happens when you don't exalt God, when you don't keep God above all other things. They will eventually destroy you. That's the message of the second commandment. These idols will destroy you. Elizabeth Elliot says the Christian life is a process of God breaking our idols one by one. And you and I need to be in the business of detecting and exposing these idols and eliminating these idols from our lives because this is essential. And I think it's never ending. As soon as you get rid of the idol of today, next week you'll find another idol popped up. That's what the human heart does. That's what our flesh does. So you got to be on guard. What is it that preoccupies your heart? What is it that preoccupies your thoughts? What is it that preoccupies your time? What is it that compels you, that motivates you, that drives you? And I'm begging you today to consider what I'm saying here. Consider what God is instructing you here with the second commandment. And search your minds. Bible says, be transformed by the renewing of your minds. And you got things going on in your minds that should not be there. And they've become gods to you. And you got to get rid of them. Bible tells us to guard our hearts. Let me end with this. When we're talking about idols, we're talking about these false images. And then I got thinking that you and I are created in the image of God. You think about that? We are created in His image. We don't need statues. We don't need crosses. We don't need pictures. We don't need all this stuff. You and I are created in His image. Now think about that a little bit. And we are supposed to have the mind of Christ, and we are supposed to reflect God's glory. We are not supposed to set up images to worship. We are to be images that worship. The problem is we fall short. The Bible says we fall short because we are sinners. So although we were created in His image, we fall far short from having the mind of Christ and from reflecting Christ. So we're worthless idols ourselves because of our sins. But Jesus isn't. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, is what it says in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. He's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. Think, what does that mean? You want an idol? You want an image? You want a picture of God? Jesus. And I got to think about this. Isaiah chapter 53. He had no beauty, no majesty to attract us to Him. Nothing in His appearance that we should desire Him. That's intentional, you know. Because our human heart, we want something that's pretty. We want something that's attractive. We want something that's beautiful, something that's majestic. And because our minds, our flesh, is focused on the physical. And we got to get past that. That's why Jesus didn't come being all beautiful and everything. The focus should be on His character, on His nature. He's full of truth. He's full of justice. He's full of holiness, full of righteousness, full of grace. It's not about what He looks like. It's not about how He makes you feel. It's about truth. It's about the nature of God, and Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God. So you look to Jesus. Secondly, Jesus is the radiance of God's glory, is what it says in Hebrews 1, verse 3. The Son is the radiance of God's glory. And number three, Jesus is the exact representation of His being. Once again, Hebrews 1, 3, the Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of His being. Why look anywhere else? You look to Jesus. You look elsewhere and you smash those gods and you smash those idols and you fix your eyes on Jesus. God cannot be seen any more clearly than in Jesus. Not a picture of Jesus, not a statue of Jesus. Those are physical. Those are limiting. But the heart of Jesus, about love, holiness, justice, grace, forgiveness, fix your eyes on Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus. I want to challenge you with the message that I've given today to think, don't let this be, okay, number two, check that one off. Next week we'll talk about the third commandment. No, we got to spend some time this week thinking about God's message to us. No idols. No idols. So you need to take inventory. You need to do some spring cleaning this fall, okay? Get rid of some stuff that is coming between you and God. Get rid of some stuff that's enslaving you. Things that you know God doesn't want you to have anything to do with this stuff. You know this stuff is dominating you and controlling you and lying to you, deceiving you. You know it. So do some spring cleaning and then fix your eyes on Jesus. Let Jesus be the object of your worship and only Jesus. To your heart.